Bill Senator Wyden are present.
The first bill.
Incident, we're on teleconference. The first bill, which is sponsored 70% bill number 304 by Senator Coghill.
Senator Coghill, would you care to testify first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I'll give a short statement and then we'll get to the expert testimony on it. Senate Bill 304, an act relating to disability insurance and providing protective days, would establish a comprehensive disability insurance association. The purpose of the association would be to provide access to disability insurance coverage to all residents of the state who are denied adequate insurance coverage for any reason or who otherwise are considered uninsurable. And there's a community out there that cannot get comprehensive insurance, health insurance, and so therefore their family is denied. The availability of this insurance would be through a pool established by members of the medical service corporations in the state that offer the medical coverage through health insurance, and it would be mandatory for those corporations offering any medical coverage to maintain the membership in the association. The bill goes on to provide a governing board of directors, would include the director of the Division of Insurance, and they shall establish a plan of operation to provide the disability insurance. The bill has been requested by quite a large constituency throughout the state, Mr. Chairman, and I think that we could go through it analysis section by section, but for the purposes of this teleconference, why we have people that are much more knowledgeable out in the field that want to testify on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We do have two on sites, Anchorage and Glen Allen. So we'll go to Anchorage. Do you hear us all right?
Yes, Senator, we do.
Thank you. Is David Stratton there, please?
Yes, sir. One moment, please.
Yes, Mayor Senator.
Proceed, Dave.
Yeah, I'm Dave Stratton. I represent both the Southern Alaska Life Underwriters and the Alaska Independent Insurance Agency Brokers. Back in 1981, approximately, I was a member of the healthcare committee that worked with the Battelle Institute to take a look at the healthcare provisions in the state and come up with some recommendations for what could be done to spread health insurance, healthcare availability a little bit more across the state. And the state had a lot of money back in those days, and even at that, the main recommendation from that committee was to establish a pool for the health uninsurables in the state in order to allow them the opportunity to purchase healthcare at some cost, which was not available if they'd been declined. Currently, we're in a little different money situation today in the state. However, there still is no pool in existence, although I believe it's been recommended from time to time by various factions in the state. This particular bill would give those people that can afford to pay an opportunity to buy a major medical type insurance coverage product that would give them some major medical benefits with a fairly high deductible and a relatively reasonable out-of-pocket stop loss, as well as a lifetime maximum. That would, in turn, deliver a reasonable package of benefits. It's not a pay-all type of program. It does have some selectability and deductibles, which are fairly high compared to what's going on in the standard marketplace today. Would relieve some of the pressure for a national solution to this problem and a couple others. And it would reduce the number of potential additions to those going on to the social welfare programs. We've found in some of our research that even people that have a reasonable amount of finances, when faced with a catastrophic health loss that's not insured, very often find themselves on the rolls of the social service programs because of the exorbitant costs that are attributed to the problem. We have seen a change in trend in the group insurance markets in the last 2 to 3 years. It is not uncommon today for one or two people in a group, a sizable group, as a matter of fact, 25 to 50 employees, decline for coverage because of medical conditions. This plan would be available to those employers to cover those people and let the balance of the group be able to get into a standard rated program. So it's our feeling that the time has come for this. It would correct some of the uninsurable problems we have in the state, in addition to which it's not a a pay-all type of plan that that people would be trying to get into if they didn't need to be there. The plan does have some cost to it. And needless to say, when you cap the premium payments that are going to be made by these folks, that eventually as the plan matures, claims will exceed premiums, and the bill provides for an offset to the premium tax paid by those health insurance companies participating in the plan. So at this time, that is our position, and we are more than willing to answer any questions or continue to participate in the development of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Stratton. Are there any questions from me? Thank you. We have another person to testify in Anchorage. I believe it's Charles McGee. McKee?
A moment, please.
Yes, this is Charles McKee, and I've looked at this bill briefly. I'm not an expert on this, but I do have. I'm an expert in personal experience with the regulatory process of the state in reference to the insurance. And can you hear me?
You're coming in fine.
Okay. So I sympathize with the attempt to cover those individuals that aren't being covered by the current companies doing business in the state as it is. But until you address those issues, I think this is quite moot, this piece of legislation. And you might be better served by increasing the budget for the legal entity that covers individuals in the state that has that sole source contract. What is it over there on 6th? The reference, the legal program for people that are indigent and can't afford legal fees, and attorneys won't take them on a contingency fee basis, such as myself. And I end my comment, I say no to this until you fund adequately those, that entity, or maybe eliminate the sole source contract and fund private firms that do have attorneys that specialize in Admiralty or maritime and such cases like that, or workers' comp. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. Are there any questions from McKee? Senator Coghill?
Well, I'm not quite sure that I understand where you're coming from, because you must be reading the wrong bill. This has to do with an insurance pool. It doesn't have anything to do with legal services.
Precisely. I understand that this is attempting to cover
he's one of yours.
Medical services that aren't being covered by the current companies doing business in the state. And the reason why is we're talking about innocent people here that can't afford the extreme coverage premium payments that from those companies. I'm sure that they can get the policy if they have the money to pay for the premiums. Is that not the case?
They
just don't have the liability? There's not even available? Wasn't that the case that they had in federal court down in San Francisco? And they ruled that they couldn't even, the class action suit, 19 attorney generals, the U.S. District Court judge kicked out that they couldn't even take the case. So I think we need to, it might be a different issue, but it certainly needs to be focused on rather than start up another insurance association. You know, it's just no way out of hand nationally as well as state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McKean. Any further questions?
I forgot why I wasn't coming here in the afternoon.
We can go to Glenn Allen. Can you hear us in Glenn Allen or?
Yes, we can, Senator. This is Bob Niebrugge, and I would like to testify on behalf of the bill. I would be one of those individuals that would benefit from it, and I can relate my personal experiences with health insurance problems. I'm a diabetic, have been for 20-some years, and I'm sure you're all familiar with the standard application for health insurance, and there's one of those questions that says, have you ever had diabetes? And when you say yes, that's as far as the processing of an insurance application proceeds. The companies are sympathetic, but it makes no difference what I would be willing to pay for a premium. The insurance is simply not available. And it would be hard to express the anxiety and the risk that that puts an individual and a family at. I'm in a position where I earn a good income. I could pay a premium that was rated higher than a standard premium and would expect to if it were available. But it has not been available. And unless this legislation becomes law, it won't be available. And it is a trend to see more and more of this kind of a solution. There are now 19 states that have passed similar legislation and 15 additional states considering it. And I think one of the greatest appeals of the legislation is it is not a welfare or giveaway kind of a program. We indeed are asking for the state to create the structure that would put it in place, but the insurance companies would be doing the insuring, and I and people like myself would be paying the premiums. Be they 150% or 200% of the norm, it would be a welcome relief to have the insurance. You can imagine with the skyrocketing costs of health care what it would do if I should have the misfortune of, say, having a heart attack and surviving. The survival would bankrupt our family while I was in a hospital being tended to. Sad but true, I'd be better off if I didn't survive a heart attack in terms of the financial condition that it would leave my family. So I really urge the Senate to consider this seriously. I can't begin to stress how important it is to those people like myself and the anxiety that we feel being at risk for a financial crisis over health insurance, while at the same time we are willing to pay the cost that we would reasonably expect to pay. It is certainly not a welfare program. The insurance industry, as I've talked to them and discussed this issue, are very supportive of it. It's not unlike risk pools that have been created for workman's comp or automobile insurance. And I think that the need is greater than you can imagine. The people that would benefit from this program will be forever indebted to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob, any questions for me? Thank you. We'll go to a testimony here in June. We'll stay on the network. Don Close?
My name is Don Koch. I'm the Acting Deputy Director for the Division of Insurance. The position of the Division on this bill is neutral. We have prepared a bill analysis which goes into a section by section that outlines a few items that we see as needing some amendment. Please don't mistake the neutrality for being opposed to the legislation. We think that there's a policy decision involved in this kind of legislation that really is in your court and that's where it ought to be. We would be more than happy to assist in addressing the technical issues that we think ought to be resolved. Some of those, for example, include such things as a definition that more clearly defines what dental condition means in the section 2155.110.2. There are some mandated benefits currently in the statutes in 2142, 345, and 365 that are not addressed in the benefit structure of this package, which we think in order to fit with the rest of the statute ought to be addressed specifically either up or down. One of those happens to be addressing newborn children, coverage from the date of birth. I can't frankly remember what the other one is, but it ought to be looked at. We can provide you with a list of the things that we think are needed some correction. If you'd like, I can go on down with those, whatever your pleasure. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Sure. Thank you, Senator.
What is the maximum potential financial impact that this would have if it were enacted and things didn't work out perhaps as well financially? What would be our liability, or general fund liability, taxpayer liability?
We've attempted to cover. Thank you, Senator, through the chair. We've attempted to cover that in the fiscal note.
That is over $4 million.
Yes, sir. 4.234 million.
4-0.
Maybe. Yeah. It is maybe because we don't know, but it ranges from 0 to 4.234.7. The problem is we just have no idea whether the rates with the cap at 150 are going to be adequate. If they are not adequate, then that's the point in time that you start dipping into the taxes. If the rate is adequate, then you don't have that problem.
No more questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
How does that carry on, though? I guess the downside is those that are covering social services. If you got to think from that side, if there would be a savings.
Yes, sir. You're going to end up paying for it someplace.
Right.
Either as a social problem where people are not receiving the care they need, or in another program. So this is all we're attempting to do here is identify what potential is for tapping these specific tax resources.
Thank you, Senator Cogley.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was going to be my comment. My comment is that, which is the lesser of two evils? What we're trying to do here is to establish a pool. The pool is established through the carriers that are going to be offering the insurance. The people that are the beneficiaries are going to be paying a higher rate than the other people in order to get in the pool. But I think the significant part is that the insurance carriers that are out there offering health insurance have to belong to the pool and have to provide this. And it's a Russian roulette. The insurance business being the insurance business, it has to go from zero to the maximum amount. But the only thing you haven't got in your fiscal note is that if we don't go to the zero to the maximum amount, how much comes in the back door and how much is put on the public rolls in welfare?
Would you like me to respond to that, sir?
Come in.
Obviously, I can only, in a Division of Insurance, Department of Commerce, fiscal note, only address those resources that are directly under our agency. There may be other agencies where you need a fiscal note to say, what if? But I don't have a way to give you numbers for that. And I would agree, Senator, you're correct.
Mr. Chairman, I was not questioning the department's fiscal note. I was questioning that there's another end to the story.
Well, we have Department of Health and Social Services here. Maybe they can give us some answer on that question. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We can go back to Anchorage. There are two more witnesses. Bruce Moore.
Yes, Senator, this is Bruce Moore. I'm president of Southern Alaska Life Underwriters and also an insurance broker. I currently represent about 4,000 clients, some of them are 1,500 as health clients. Number of my clients have been faced with a problem of being uninsurable, or I think even a bigger problem of being substantially rated or have major exclusions on their contracts. A lot of people, when a person thinks of the uninsurable, they think of the indigent person, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. Now, as an association, as well as personally, and for the support of a number of my clients, we wholeheartedly support the bill. We've done a lot of research as to the success of similar legislation in other states, and it's something that based with me here today. But I think the first thing that we as a state have to determine is what is our responsibility. is it the responsibility of we as the insurance industry and we as state citizens to see that individuals within our state who may have a health problem or be uninsurable, is it our responsibility to assist them in providing adequate health insurance coverage? The state's insurance companies that operate within the state of Alaska share the feeling unanimously that it is our responsibility to see that all people in the state of Alaska have the opportunity to purchase health insurance. The concern in the past has been that none of those insurance companies want to face the problem alone. We've seen it in the past where insurance companies have been willing to issue policies very liberally and accept those people that were uninsurable from an underwriting standpoint from other companies. Those companies have faced some very, very serious financial problems because of what we refer to as being dumped on. And so the current status is that all insurance companies have tightened up their underwriting to the point that every day, today included, we find people that are uninsurable and cannot buy health insurance at any given price. All of those companies, however, understand their responsibility, and they are willing to share the risk with the other insurance companies on a pro rata basis based on their market share in the state, which we all feel is fair. The fiscal note has been discussed, and I think we should address that the fiscal note, as applied in this case, is the tax credit that would be given back to the insurance companies based on a subsidy that they would have to pay at the end of any year to reimburse the Health Insurance Association for cost of claims over and above the premium generated by the pool. We all feel that there will be some subsidy. I do not have any idea what that subsidy would be. As an example, in the state of Connecticut, who's had their health insurance pool since 1976, also have a 150% tax cap. As of December 31 of 1987, based on 2,200 people being insured in the pool, required a subsidy, a total subsidy of $934,000. In this case, that subsidy would be applied back to the state of Alaska in the form of a tax credit. As was previously stated, the $4.2 million or $4.3 million as potential cost to the state is in fact a maximum cost to the state, and there is some concern by the insurance companies participating in this pool that it's possible that cap would not be enough. In that situation, any subsidies over and above the $4.3 million passed on to the insurance companies with no offsetting tax credit. And that, although obviously not excited about that, they are willing to accept that burden. I think the bottom line again is, what is our responsibility? For many, many years, health insurance has been in a crisis zone. We've been seeing 15 to 25% inflationary trends annually throughout this country. Washington has many bills in their committees to come up with their solutions, if you will, everything from socialized health care to mandated benefits for employers. We feel that we as an industry have assisted in designing this bill to meet the needs of the majority of the constituents.
Somebody pulled a plug.
Responsibility lies, and we as an industry, both as an organization and individual brokers, who are representing those people who are in the point of being uninsurable, feel that our responsibility lies in making a program available to them, understanding that it is still their responsibility to come up with a fund. It is not our intent to design a plan that is a freebie, or design a plan would cover every known condition from day one, but rather to design a plan that would have some actuarial merits to it, thereby the limitations that we put in the program, such as waiting periods for pre-existing conditions and so forth. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Moore. Michael Cassino?
That's Michelle.
Did I get the right name, last name, Michelle?
It's Cassano. It's pretty close. It's a tough one.
Okay, fine. Proceed.
Thank you. I'm with the American Diabetes Association in Alaska. I'm the executive director. The issue of insurance needs is one that when I came to the association 5.5 years ago, I answered 3 calls a year in regards to insurance. I answer at least that many each week. We have a great clientele. There's approximately 20,000 individuals in the state with diabetes, and we service 8,000 of those people that we know of. As my friend from Glen Allen testified, the minute you see the word diabetes, that's usually the end of your conversation with the insurance company. Diabetes is no longer a disease that has a shortened life expectancy, and with the lack of medical insurance for prudent, regular medical care, that's when you're leading up to a disaster. And without reasonable medical insurance costs, these people who are well able to take care of themselves financially could not survive it. So not only myself, but on behalf of our state board of directors, which met this weekend to review the bill, we are in favor of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in Anchorage who would like to testify?
One moment, please. There is someone else.
My name is Bob Piscotti, and I'm a small business owner in Anchorage, employing less than 10 people. And I found that it's extremely difficult, since we have one employee with a pre-existing condition, to even get rated. Bottom line, as Mr. Morris stated, is that we become susceptible only to that which would even consider anything, and basically don't get an opportunity to shop any kind of insurance. And thus, I've seen our rates literally go off the wall in terms of the amount of monthly expense. In this capacity, I would strongly endorse acceptance of this type of legislation, but it at least gives an umbrella to those people that do have pre-existing conditions, neurological disorders and that type of thing, diabetes, that would also, that would therefore allow them to have some access to medical insurance. I also sit on the board of the American Diabetes, and it's been a thing that's extremely frustrating to those of us that sit there on a day-to-day basis and deal with people that, despite, as been pointed out twice before in this meeting, despite their ability to pay for premiums, have no access to it. I think on that basis alone, as a small business owner, I'm getting hit twice, one because I'm a small group, and two because I have an employee who has a pre-existing condition. And the alternative I have on that basis is to take this individual and remove him from my employ. I'm not willing to do that. It puts him at jeopardy to a point that's absolutely unattainable. In this particular case, what we do get is an extremely higher insurance premium for the privilege of carrying him on the rolls. And I would find that as an option, but I think this type of legislation would have a situation much better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bob, is any questions from the committee? Thank you. Is there any further testimony from Anchorage?
No, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come back to Juneau then. We have Dave Williams with the Department of Health and Social Services. Can you ask any questions about it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Williams. I'm Planning Section Chief for Health and Social Services. I'm here mainly to answer some questions, which I understand there is one. Wanted to say, though, about the bill is that we feel it is a division of insurance responsibility, and they're right, you know, to take a look at the way that this is done and support their neutral position. One thing I became aware of working with the Governor's Interim Health Care Commission was that there is a significant number of people out there who are uninsurable. Is there a question?
Well, Dave, we got into the discussion. I don't think that we need to dwell on it too much, because I think it's apparent that this is a measure that would allow people to go ahead and be able to carry insurance that they would no longer be able to get. And by having that insurance out there, that saves a tremendous drain on your department in the long run. I guess that was the whole discussion around the fiscal note. That if we don't have this down the line, your fiscal note is going to go up drastically.
if I read the bill correctly, I think the main impact here is going to be on uncompensated care that's delivered by hospitals, nursing homes. If I read the bill correctly on page 13, line 28, there is an exclusion for those folks who are eligible for medical assistance, which is that's our folks that we serve with the Department of Health and Social Services.
I think Senator Coggins' point is that
they reach that classification.
That they would reach the classification of being under your medical program if they had a catastrophic illness, used all their resources, and that would then thrust them into your program unwillingly.
That's correct. We've heard a number of folks testify to that effect at commission hearings also, that quickly the resources go away and they become eligible for medical assistance from a financial standpoint.
Any further questions? Thank you. Hannah Knudsen, please.
I'm Harlan Dudson, Health Association of Alaska, representing hospitals and nursing homes, and we want to heartily endorse, applaud, cheer, and thank Senator Coghill and the insurance industry for putting this bill together, and it's for a number of reasons. Certainly the first is the growing number of uninsured and the people out there that either are uninsurable or can't afford insurance. And that number is somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 people, and that's getting to be a pretty substantial number. One of the big issues you folks have got here is the high cost of state employee insurance, and one of the things that this piece of legislation should do is cut down on the cost shifting. Because what happens when an uninsured patient comes into the hospital and can't pay for that thing, it's shifted over to those that can. And the state employees insurance program, I think, has been picking up a good percentage of that, and that'll help cut down on it. This is a badly needed piece of legislation, and anything we can do to help pass it or make it better, we'd be glad to do.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. Is there anyone here who would care to testify against the bill? Jordan, you want to testify?
I would just like to put on the record. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gordon Evans. I'm the representative of the Health Insurance Association of America, which is a national trade association of the private health industry. We represent about 330 companies that write about 85% of the private insurance written in the United States. And we do not include Blue Cross and Blue Shield. But the HIA does support this legislation. We have been working on this, believe it or not, since my recollection is about 6 years. Representative Sun had originally started in the House. We could never quite get past it, but we had reached the point where we had reached a compromise that's embodied in the bill by Senator Coghill now here, that's 150% average of the premium and a premium tax offset. And as I indicated earlier, HIA supports this bill, and we especially support leaving the premium tax offset in the bill. I know that's been a problem sometimes, but we think that makes it more palatable for the many companies that do write private health insurance by having a premium tax offset in there.
Thank you, Gordon. Any other questions, Commissioner?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just would like to say that Gordon's correct. This is certainly not. This is a consensus bill. It's been on the table, and I think we've written since we've introduced it. Well, we've rewritten it twice to get all of the concerns in, and it's certainly been done by the insurance industry as well as by the state. So it's pretty much has its agreement all the way around.
Mr. Chairman, well, Senator Coghill,
I'm wearing a beard, so you can identify the two. I just have one question. I wonder what the premium would be if there was no indirect state subsidy by virtue of coming back against the state for whatever balance I wonder what that premium would be.
Excuse me, we can't hear you.
Would it be a prohibitive premium?
You mean that, are you saying what would be the premium if you didn't have the offset in there?
Yes. I wonder what, it would be prohibitive, is that the testimony generally speaking? I sort of heard it throughout it, that it's going to take an indirect, well, it's going to take a direct state subsidy, even though it comes out of insurance premiums.
It comes out of the insurance premium, it's an offset against the insurance premium. That argument was made 2 years ago when that whole offset program was put together. And I think that it would make it prohibitive, but it's not an underwrite that we have to make a direct appropriation to it.
No, I understand where it comes from and how it comes about. It'd be less for the general fund, though.
Well, yes, but the thing is that what we're doing is we're taking care of a problem out there that exists.
I don't oppose it, Senator. I'm just curious what that amount might be.
I don't think that anybody could. And I, you know, according to statistics, you're not going to get that demand on it anyway. If you take a look at the statistics of the lower 48, you're getting a demand that might, if the demand on the pool would be probably about one-fifth of the total premium cost to begin with.
Thank you, Senator. I don't think everybody is quite on board because there's 9 amendments here proposed by the Division of Insurance. Now, why they aren't incorporated in the bill, I don't know. So some work has to be done. So maybe I suggest that we do draft a committee substitute which incorporates these amendments, and then the Division of Insurance could identify each one and what it does rather than go through the bill again in detail. Maybe we can bring the bill up next meeting or when it be ready.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you want, I could work with the Division of Insurance and be able to have it to bring it up on Wednesday for the teleconference, and we could go through each one of those amendments. I'm trying to figure out where they're at here. I just have the analysis. I don't have the list.
Chairman, if the sponsor is satisfied with the amendments, I would be satisfied not to go through the individual discussion each one. If he's not, then knows that he's not satisfied with it. Maybe he ought to be subject to debate, just a suggestion.
Well, I guess I'm a little confused that we're dealing with a sponsor substitute now, and I thought maybe this might have been done at this point, but evidently a sponsor substitute has been drafted without input from the Division of Insurance, is that right?
No, that's not correct. The Division of Insurance was well aware of what was going on, and I would be more than happy, Mr. Chairman, to work with them, and I don't know what these are. Maybe they're, most of them are, look like they're kind of technical in nature, but maybe we ought to get the insurance agency, or the insurance fell up here.
Well, why don't you go ahead and work with them, and we'll bring the bill up as quickly as possible.
That concludes the teleconference. Thank you.
Good idea. It allows people insurance. They pay something towards their care, as he says, before they become destitute. They don't pay at all.
Yeah, you know,
it's a possibility.
No wonder what
they pay. Insurance companies don't sign to them. What would the insurance industry expect with the?
With Representative Sun, that we were actually at that point looking at 200% cap, and we had compromised on 150, and the industry was still going to lose money on it. But they
Do you lose compared to other investments, or do you lose actually lose?
But they were. Since this was being imposed, the industry had to belong to this if they want to do business in the state. The alternative was some of the industry said, well, they might just leave the state.
I know, we always have that possibility.
Okay, Senate Bill 335, License Health Maintenance Organization, Senator Tua. We're not on teleconference.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Coghill stated that we do have technical people here, and we do have a breakdown for the committee HMO program is national in scope. Most states already have it, have it for quite some time. What we're looking at, and I'll just give you a brief review, but we're looking at a situation in which the military expenditure for the nation's GNP is about a level 6%, and we're all concerned about it. We all are. But the health GNP is going to 12 and predicted to 18%. At some stage, then, the insurers and the business community is going to expect the citizen, which was paying about 5% of his income now roughly for health, to contribute a greater portion of their income, and industry not to continue to escalate in its support. You see Chrysler, for instance, saying that a car today, it's made in the United States, can cost $600 to $800 just for health premiums, puts them out of competition with the international competitors. I've been a member of a health maintenance organization already 20 years ago or so, close to it, Kaiser Clinic. I was also a director of a health maintenance organization for a period of time. Nothing new or different. It's predicted that, and this is by the national underwriters in a report by Richard Donahue in July 10th, 89, it's predicted that health maintenance organizations will become the dominant financier of private health care in the United States before the year 2000. Then we will probably go to something subsequent to that, like the Canadian National Health Insurance System, as prices continue to go up for medicine. Employers now pay more than 40% of the nation's health care, and they're going to demand a bigger say in it. Well, an HMO essentially provides arranges for basic health care services to persons on a prepaid basis. This form of organization combines some of the functions of an insurer with those of traditional health care providers. In this way, the providers of medical care share in the financial risk of health care and therefore have an incentive to reduce health care costs and promote preventive medicine. This kind of organization is not possible under our existing statutes. This bill is based on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Model Act and provides for a framework for the establishment of these hybrid organizations. Again, it's nothing new or different. We had one briefly in Anchorage, probably extra legal rather than illegal. And we need the authorizing legislation. We've combined the legislation that was given a cursory look in drafting by the state Legislative Affairs Agency for myself with the governor's much more well thought out, and although we did have some additions that were recommended to the bill that had been prepared for some time by the administration. That's what you have in the sponsor substitute. Is the administration bill has had a great deal of work and time and effort placed in it, with some amendments then from the legislation that I had originally drafted. Again, based on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners Model Act. You do have a sectional analysis, and you do have people testify. I heartily recommend it. I think it's a necessity. It provides an opportunity at first hand for reducing the costs of medical care. In the long run, I do not believe there will be a saving either, but in the short run, first run, according to former Governor Lamb, you do save a considerable amount. And again, we're going to go to a situation in the United States that the wealthy will always have one level of medical care. The rest of the people have the option or can be part of an organization that provides basic medical care for not everything, but for most of the key problems that occur with people in the medical needs. HMOs are the first step in providing you a reasonable cost containment method of securing medical health. Save a number of industries, including the state, considerable money if they become members of HMO.
Is there any questions?
We do have people testify then.
Don Cook?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Koch. I'm Acting Deputy Director with the Division of Insurance
We'd like to thank Senator Katula for the introduction of this legislation. We believe that it is a good piece of legislation, and we're very much in favor of it. We think that HMOs are a concept that should enable people to get a better grip on those things affecting their costs. And if that alone instills a savings, there's an opportunity at least that these savings may be a little bit more long-term. At the very worst, we have status quo, but we think that this will be a vast improvement. We do have a bill analysis that I believe you've received. There are a couple of non-substantive technical amendments on the back page of that document, and it's basically a couple of the sites, cross-reference sites, are not what they should be. Also, we wanted to make sure that it's clear that the Director of Insurance has the ability to adopt regulations for those functions that he's required to perform. We think that it's inferred, but we want to make sure that it's clear. So we've added a section for that. Other than that, if you have questions, I'd be happy to attempt answering them.
I have one. Senator Katula. Are you aware, and this is a report from the New York Times, January 31st, 1990, that in the new domestic efforts of the Bush administration, they proposed reducing Medicare premiums by $60 a year for beneficiaries who join a health maintenance organization?
That's right.
There's some other proposals, too, that are important to it. So they're strongly encouraging. As you know, the flack over old-timers' problems that's occurred with the injury.
Yeah, there's a lot of merit in this kind of a system, and it starts to give some local control for local conditions that doesn't presently exist. So that alone, I think, is very important. There's a whole bunch of features that
we just put in consumer participation for us.
This does
safety.
I haven't had a chance to go through the bill yet, Don, but how would this affect Denali Center in Fairbanks? Let's just use that as an example.
Denali Center? I'm
Help
sorry.
Me, it's a long-term or public, quasi-public healthcare.
I'm not certain how this
is. It may be acting like the burned one as a quasi HMO right now.
That extra legal presence, not illegal, but there's nothing speaks to its allowability. There was, at least for a while, and I'm not certain that it still exists, the ability for HMOs to form under federal law. More and more of the states have found HMOs that would like to form under state law without having to go through all the hoops that you typically have to go through under the federal scene. So there have been some federal HMOs in the past that are, as you say, valid.
Could I guess that yours probably does not reinsure, it probably provides a level service and it may even allow for prepayment. I don't know, but it probably doesn't go to the extent of reinsuring and doesn't go through some insurance provisions that you could open HMO. That's just a guess, but I just suspect that those technical amendments have any problem with that? No, sir. So they're just an error on our part.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you, Senator Katula.
Lord Evans?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gordon Evans. I represent the Health Insurance Association of America, and just as I had the other bill, our client does support this bill and urges its adoption. That's all I got to say.
We've been on the first, on the same side, so
yeah.
What ones we've
got? More too, I hope. Has this issue been around for a long time?
HMOs, yes.
A considerable amount of time. My understanding.
Oh,
20 years.
No, but I mean, has it been in the legislature?
No. Oh, no.
Is this a refined problem?
That's actually been seriously introduced and pushed, at least in the past 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm. I know the issue's been, Mr. Chairman, I know the issue's been around. I was wondering if this is the
first time I think I introduced it. I just got into it, got thinking about it. In fact, nobody even put me up to it. I just thought, what is the halfway point between this and providing medicine for everybody? As I was, you know, we've got 3 or 4 bills floating around, a couple I've introduced on the subject of how do you get into, say, the Oregon system of providing medicine at some level for every person in the state that's not now covered. And this seems to be, right now, probably the best possible opportunity for a lot of people, not all, but for a lot.
Is there a direct relationship, Senator, between increase in age, increase in interest in these types of bills?
Yes. Although for you and I don't think it probably covers so much.
Okay. Need a motion for committee substitute.
I'd so move.
Ask unanimous consent.
I ask with
the proposed technical amendments.
Yes,
any objections? Motion carried.
Word, Mr. Chairman, the problem is that Don should have said that my amendments to my bill were technical in nature too, and then we
didn't pick up on it fast enough.
We have a committee substitute before the committee.
I'd move it.
Any objections?
No.
Motion carries. Now we have one final bill before the committee. It's Senate Bill Number 315 by Senator Fisher. We have Senator Fisher's staff person here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Moses, and I'm with the Senate Health Committee. And the bill that you have before you is a product of a lot of work by the Senate Health Committee. Essentially, it was an attempt by the committee to address a lingering problem, and that is one of taking care of our elderly citizens later on when they have a need for funding of long-term care disability services. And it was an attempt to put a private sector initiative into effect and hopefully help reduce some of the pressures on the Medicaid budget. There is a zero fiscal note with that, and both the department and the health insurance industry have signed off and said that it looks like a good bill. There are some amendments, I'm told, that are out there lingering on this, and I'm told that most parties have signed off and are in agreement on them. And with that, I'll try and answer some questions, and if you have technical questions, maybe the department or other groups might answer them better than I.
If you think, I'm sorry I didn't get the amendments distributed. I thought we all had a copy, but the amendments were for the committee. Thank you. Any questions? Thanks. Don Cope? Jordan Evans?
My name is Don Koch, acting deputy division of insurance. We're in favor of this legislation. I'm willing to answer any questions you may have. We think the thing is a pretty good form. We don't have a problem with the amendments offered by Mr. Tanzi.
You see the amendment back there? Fine. Any questions from senators? Hold on, this has been around.
That's a good question. We've seen bills like this in past legislatures. The model is relatively recent, and there's been a drive by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, insurance commissioners across the country, to get this passed. The model was finalized in December of '89 in its current form, so this is real up to date. It's been a long-standing problem, and it's something that the insurance commissioners have just finally come to solid grips with. So we're kind of happy to see
that they have
time to consideration. Yes.
Thank you. Gordon Evans? Thank you.
is not plastic pipes, sir.
It's coming.
Again, Gordon Evans, representing the Health Insurance Association of America. And Mr. Chairman, the Health Insurance Association of America had asked Senator Fisher to introduce this bill last year. We introduced it at the end of last year, and at that time it was based on the NAIC model that's up to date. And as Mr. Koch said, the NAIC had made some changes between then, so those changes were incorporated in the CS that you have before you now, that when it went through the HES committee earlier this year. We favor the bill, naturally, and the changes that have been proposed by Mr. Tangen, HIA has signed off on those. It's again a very technical matter. When they get around to doing the CS, it'll just take a global change, I guess is the term they use. Everywhere the word disability appears after the term long-term care, it should be eliminated because it does affect life insurance policies and annuities as well as health insurance policies. In this state, the word disability insurance is used for health insurance. So, and then the other minor change is made that just the word group got stuck in somehow when it shouldn't have been there. There are instances in the bill where the word disability is properly in there, and as I say, the only time that word disability should be eliminated is where it follows the term long-term care. But there are right now, I believe, 35 states that have adopted long-term care bills, and there's another 7 or 8, including Alaska, that it's now being considered in. And we heartily support this bill and the CS, and would hope that it moves fast so we can get it this year, if possible. And since I understand there's no fiscal notes accompanying this bill, and I know it's supposed to go to finance after that, we'll see whether we actually have to go to finance on that. Thank you. Thank you. Would you like to answer any questions back to
this? We ask ourselves that all the time, don't we? Why does this bill go to finance?
Yeah, we don't make that determination.
Speaker Tangen?
Speaker by hand. Is this program handled by the Coffey, Elias, and Petula Insurance Company? I just want to know.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is J.P. Tangen. I'm appearing today on behalf of the American Council of Life Insurance. I've already distributed copies of my proposed amendments to the legislation, and as you've heard, none of the people who are behind this legislation have any objections to it. I simply want to make it clear that we, the American Council of Life Insurance, does endorse this legislation, and as Mr. Evans has quite clearly pointed out, the concern we have with the usage of the word disability is in the context of the defined term long care disability insurance. And so therefore, the only changes that we would like to make in regard to that particular amendment is where it's used in conjunction with the defined term. But assuming those amendments are adopted, the ACLI endorses this legislation and asks you to pass it.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator, do it.
I don't have the beer. We're talking about disability. The one on the second amendment, JP, that you've got nine.
Yes, sir.
Is there other places in there indicated by somebody that disability was in other places in the bill?
Yes, sir. The word disability is utilized in several places in the bill where it is not part of the defined term long care disability insurance, long term care disability insurance.
Like on line 26, for example, on the bill, long term loss of.
I'm not exactly sure which page you're looking at. Am I
on page 9? But on page 9?
That's part of the term, the defined
line
term.
Line 26.
Long-term care disability is part of the defined term, Senator. But a place where an illustration of where the term disability is used, but not as part of the defined term, for instance, would be on page 1, line 23. since the disability insurance requirements imposed under AS 21.51 and the group policy, the group disability insurance requirements imposed under AS 21.54. That's examples of where the term disability, without being part of the defined term, I use.
All right. Well, Gordon said something about that there was, the chairman, that there were two or three places that the disability name had to come out.
No,
where it stayed in.
It stayed in. Where it would stay in. Yes. If you look throughout the bill, Senator, as a matter of fact, I've gone through with the yellow highlighter, if you'd like, and you can see all the places that the defined term was used, and in most instances, it needs to come out because it's part of the defined term. But where it's not part of the defined term, where it's utilized independently of the words long-term care, then it would want to stay in.
Very good. I understand that.
Okay. Well, maybe if you'd mind working with Sheila on those, so we can get them all proper ones in place.
No problem.
Any substitute.
Yeah.
Based upon this letter.
Yes, sir.
And motion, I guess, for committee substitute.
I move the committee substitute and ask unanimous consent.
Any objections?
Motion carries.
Objection. Motion carries. We move the bill up.
Chairman, I would move the bill committee substitute in the my recommendation.
Any objections? Motion carried. We're through.
Thank you.